My guest at this time is Federal Communications Commissioner Brendan Carr. He was nominated to the position by President Trump earlier this year and confirmed by the U.S. Senate in August. He previously served as legal counsel to Ajit Pai, who now serves as chairman of the FCC. The commission is at the center of a political firestorm right now, following the decision by Chairman Pai to advance an effort to reverse the Obama-era FCC's decision to implement net neutrality. Pai and his allies say the government should not be micromanaging the internet. Critics of the effort, though, say the plan gives too much power to the likes of Verizon, AT&T, and Comcast, which provide the internet to most consumers. Public comment on the plan to reverse net neutrality runs until December 14th, and it's getting heated. Protesters suggest doing this would murder democracy and are even bringing the chairman's young children into the debate. So what's really going on here, and why is this getting so intense, and what's likely to happen? And Mr. Carr, thanks very much for being with us.
Well, thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it. And not a bad summary yourself of the events that are going on here in Washington. We are set up to vote December 14th to repeal what was a 2015 decision by the Obama-era FCC to apply what's known in D.C. speak as Title II of the Communications Act to the Internet. That was an unprecedented decision that we had never done before. And so I think there is a lot of interest in this. There's a lot of passion in it. I welcome that. I think people should be involved in these issues. It's the intersection of government and the Internet. But at the end of the day, I think what we're doing, as you sort of indicated, is we're going back to the model we had in 2015. There's a lot of confusion about completely eliminating all protections that consumers have online. Far from it. Again, there are numerous consumer protections that are going to be at the core of net neutrality that are going to stay in place just like we had them in 2015.
And we'll get to that in just a moment, but let's dial it back for the folks who know the term but maybe don't know exactly what's at issue here. So what did the Obama-era FCC actually do when it implemented net neutrality 2 years ago?
So in 2015, it applied, again, what's sort of called as Title II of the Communications Act, which arises from the 1930s and was designed to regulate the monopoly, Ma Bell telephone monopoly. It's not designed to sort of regulate a fast-moving, competitive marketplace. And then pursuant to that reclassification, it then adopted a series of rules, open internet rules, pursuant to Title II.
So many people, just casual internet users, might not see a lot of difference in their web use over the past 2 years. What has been the impact, though, of net neutrality on the internet, both in terms of content and quality of service?
Yeah, so what we've seen, you know, we've been looking at it at the FCC. You know, over the last 2 years, we've seen a decline in investment in broadband networks as a result of the Title II reclassification. That's number one. Number two, we've also seen ISPs, service providers, that we're going to upgrade networks, that we're going to deploy new antennas to get new services out there, pull back on those new deployments. And we've seen some innovative new offerings from providers that have been kept on the shelf because of this massive regulatory overreach that's associated with Title II. By going back to Title I, we can reverse those harms that we're seeing without, again, completely eliminating all regulation of ISPs. We're going to continue to have robust consumer protections in place.
So essentially the argument you're making is that increasing government regulation is reducing the incentive to innovate.
That's right. That's really what the foundation of Title II is about. Again, remember, it's designed to regulate monopolies. It's designed to regulate scarcity, and it's pushing the market in that direction. I think we can get government out of micromanaging how the internet operates without completely letting ISPs loose to do anything they want. I think at the end of the day, again, we know from our experience from 2015 and from 20 years before that, that that's going to be in the better interest of consumers.
So this is largely a return to the pre-2015 rules, but you mentioned some protections remain. What are those?
Exactly. So one of the actual negative downsides you don't hear a lot about from the Title II decision was it divested, by operation of law, the Federal Trade Commission's authority to protect consumers against ISPs. So by reversing Title II, we revest the Federal Trade Commission with authority to protect consumers. So there'll be a lot of consumer protections that come in place because of that. Second, and relatedly, consumers care passionately about their personal information and privacy online. The FTC, again, is the nation's premier enforcement body when it comes to online privacy. But again, because of Title II, that authority, as it applies to ISPs, has been carved out. And so we haven't had those protections for the last 2 years. We're going to get more privacy protections as a result of this vote. than we have right now under the status quo. And there's additional protections that if you read through the document, you'll see as well.
I've talked to a couple of people who are a little bit leery about the efforts that the FCC is doing right now. They're concerned that this gives too much power, and you've addressed this already to some extent, to the internet service providers, the Verizons, the AT&Ts, the Comcasts, and so forth, where they get to decide what the products are. They get to then also set the prices on those products, and so they have the consumer by the neck. What's your response to that concern?
I've certainly heard those concerns. And again, I think part of this is a misplaced understanding of what Title II does. Title II is not the thin line between where we are today and some of those stories that you're talking about, you know, price regulation, for instance. Title II right now is not directing the prices that ISPs charge. Title II is not stopping them from offering bundled services or a curated internet experience. Title II isn't the reason we're not seeing that. We didn't see it before Title II. We're not seeing it during Title II. There's other reasons for that, including competition, fear of subscriber loss from engaging in that conduct. Those other reasons that we're not seeing it will stay in place after Title II. But again, I think it's a misplaced view of exactly what Title II was doing right now.
Who stands to gain under the existing policy, given the passion that we're seeing here, and in addition to the political or technological principles that some folks might be very passionate about? Who's making money off of this right now that might not be doing just quite as well if you succeed here?
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be a downside for people, you know, after moving forward with this. I think ISPs are going to continue to invest. Consumers are going to continue to have a free and open internet. And edge providers, the Netflix, the Twitters, Facebook, they're going to continue to also be able to benefit from a free and open internet. Again, those edge providers are ones that launched and grew into internet giants before 2015. So they're more than capable of being completely successful outside of a Title II regime.
And obviously some of the comments I mentioned aren't necessarily mainstream comments in opposition to this policy proposal that you're advancing here. But when you hear phrases like this is going to murder democracy, I mean, those of us who can remember 2015, which I think is most of us, remembers that democracy was doing pretty well before then. So why is this getting so intense? And what do you make of some of the tactics you're seeing here?
There is a lot of fear-mongering out there. I mean, someone wrote me saying that, you know, without the FCC's Title II rules, Justin Bieber never would have been discovered online because he was discovered, obviously, through YouTube videos. But again, he was discovered long before the FCC's 2015 Title II decision. And look, I think I get it. Again, this is the internet. This is sort of the government being in this space. People, you know, naturally are reacting very passionately, but it's, you know, misplaced at the end of the day. I think there's an article out there right now that's basically equating this to the Y2K hysteria where obviously, you know, nothing happened.
Well, as you mentioned, Justin Bieber would have been discovered. However, if Justin Bieber not being discovered is your best argument, you might want to try again. I don't think too many people would be heartbroken about that. Final question here, Commissioner Carr. You mentioned December 14th is when you take this up again. Will we get a final ruling that day? How does the process work?
Exactly. So we have our open meeting. We have five commissioners at the FCC. Each commissioner gets to cast their own vote their own way. I'll be voting yes in favor of this plan. So we should know right then, as soon as the gavel strikes, where we are, where the votes are, and the public will get to see it.
What role does public comment play in a process like this? Obviously, you already have pretty strong convictions. I'm guessing others on the commission do as well. How much do you pay attention to the arguments coming in leading up to this debate?
I do have a strong conviction right now, but again, if you back up, this was a rulemaking that was launched, I believe, in April of this year. So we had a long open comment period. Over 22 million filings were submitted to the commission. We take, you know, the public's views on this very seriously. I do. The numbers of filings that we saw certainly reflected the passion that people have in it. People have been able to express their views. We've looked at the record. I've looked at the record now, and now it's time to cast the votes.
So obviously the FCC more in the headlines than it usually is. Once this is over with, what other priorities can we expect the commission to look at in the months ahead?
It's a good question. Thanks. So we're working on a lot of things. One thing that consumers may or may not know about is we're in the middle of a transition, technologically speaking, on the wireless, the mobile telephone side. Consumers right now think about 4G. We're actually moving towards what's known as 5G. The network deployment for that is going to require a massive deployment of new infrastructure, small cells, fiber. So at the FCC, we're very focused on how do we remove the regulatory barriers to the deployment of that new infrastructure so we can get it to more consumers faster. It gets into the weeds pretty quickly, but that's what we're trying to do, is streamline what we call the wireless infrastructure deployment rules.
Commissioner, it's a fierce debate, and we look forward to more important issues coming down the pike as well, like we've just discussed. Thank you, sir, for your time today.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Brendan Carr is a commissioner with the Federal Communications Commission. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.